podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by 99designs, the world's largest online graphic design marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of 200,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to receive a free design consultation. That's 99designs.com/AAA. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used Android smartphones. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy S3 and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, anywhere on your devices, all streamed instantly to you. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/twit. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of All About Android. This is episode 102, recorded on Tuesday, March 26, 2013. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps, I think, for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
Yeah, and you know what else? We have one extra person on the show today that comes very recommended. We had a lot of people, a lot of fans of the show, request that we land Marques Brownlee. You might know him as MKBHD on YouTube. Marques, it's awesome having you on the show today.
It is good to be here. Thank you for having me. And yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Absolutely. No, Marques, I'm pretty certain it's going to go okay. I've seen your videos. You're a smart guy, and you have a really good kind of production setup. I'm always really impressed by the look and kind of the production skills that you have putting your videos together. But you do a lot of really great just kind of Android reviews and walkthroughs, tutorials, and everything. Like I said, you come highly recommended, so we're stoked to have you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And we also have our largest studio audience of any of the entire run of All About Android.
We do, yeah. Although it appears that a few people exited right before the show started.
They did, yeah. We had more. There were more
but they got
then,
bored.
With the wonderful audience we have today, you guys can
exactly.
wait.
Exactly. We are super stoked to have you guys. Jack Cohen is actually in the audience, and we have a video from him coming up in the show in a little bit. But first, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. There's the whole watch, wearable computing watch fad that's going on.
Every time I turn around, something a new thing about a watch. Yeah.
A new company is saying or leaking that they're going to have a watch. T-Mobile announced new plans, which also allow for pretty inexpensive scoring of some of the latest Android devices. So that's pretty interesting. Google Keep, which we kind of talked a little bit about last week. Google Play update preview. So much onto this episode. So we might as well just dive right into the news. Boom. All right. So, first of all, can I just say, really weird wearing headphones
for the
show. It
is, yeah. We both, if you notice, both Jason and I have got our studio headphones in the ears.
It makes me feel like I should be, on the train listening to this show instead of...
What's weird is that I feel disconnected to, Chad and to the audience and stuff like that.
Totally.
I feel like, but anyway, so bear with us if we're a little
one
weird.
Ear out.
Yeah, well, you actually did hear that correctly. The news didn't have audio. That was my fault.
Oh, okay. That was my fault.
That's all right. You're forgiven.
Yeah.
All right, so let's dive right in. Eric Schmidt... Now, okay, so first of all, to back up a little bit, obviously Andy Rubin out for Android. In is Sundar Pichai.
Poor little out for Andy.
Yeah, poor little out for Andy. I'm going to miss his animation.
I will, yeah.
But that's okay. We've got another one in the wings.
Somebody posted on Google Plus, and I forget who, and I apologize for the name, but somebody made an animated GIF of Andy for me.
Yes, it's pretty awesome.
I've already used it at work 3 times.
Oh,
wow. Anyway, go.
Oh.
Right.
Yep.
I'm surprised it hasn't taken the world by storm even more than that.
It should be a meme.
Eric Schmidt put a stop, at least for now, to the speculation that Chrome and Android might actually merge into a unified product now that Sundar Pichai, who it has been the VP of Chrome, is taking over the lead on Android. Schmidt said, "We don't make decisions based on who the leader is." He continued to say, where the technology takes them, the individual efforts that they have going on. He also said that Chrome and Android will remain separate for a very long time because they solve different problems.
Mm. I can't say I'm surprised.
Yeah, yeah. That he would say that?
Yeah, that he would say that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, were you guys surprised by it, Marquez or Gina?
No.
No?
No.
No, not at all. I mean, this is what we talked about last week, right? It was like, it was weird to me that people conflated the leadership change with like merging the products, right? Mm-hmm. They seem like very separate products. I mean, I'm interested to see what kind of overlap can happen between the products. Like, so Chrome runs on Android right now. And I assume that a lot of Android products, like maybe Google Now, have Chrome technology sort of embedded in them, mm-hmm. right? But how could Android affect Chrome? You know, I mean, maybe some of the touch, you know, UI, but it makes total sense that they're going to be separate products.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer. I would love to see a little bit more integration between the two, because for me, on a personal level, a completely personal level, it's just been very hard for me to kind of crack my skull into, you know, understanding why I need Chrome. But there are some cool things about it. It's just hard to know why that over Android and why they can't cross streams a little bit more.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, I've been dying to go fully cloud and like use that Chromebox as my desktop and stuff like that. But, you know, Photoshop or Premiere or Final Cut or whatever have kept me from making that jump.
Mm-hmm.
But like I saw the Pixel, like that laptop, and that's with LTE. That's pretty sweet. Like that's pretty cool. And so, you know, maybe like I think Chrome, much like Android needed the phones and then now the tablets, Chrome is just waiting for the killer device to turn it into the killer OS.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really think it's happened yet. So.
Yeah, although the Pixel's pretty interesting. Marquez, what are your thoughts on kind of the Chrome OS? Have you had a chance to kind of play around with some of the Chrome OS, either the Chromebox or any of the laptop versions?
Yeah, I was going to say, I may be one of like six people who still use the Chromebook Pixel, at least right now. But I was going to say, like Gina said, I was looking forward to Android features coming down into Chrome. Mm-hmm. The way, you know, we actually now have a touchscreen Chrome device. It's kind of, it's lowering itself into that Android level where we see, you know, a hardware keyboard and a touchscreen at the same time. It's kind of, there's potential. I was looking forward to Google I/O and seeing what kind of stuff happens there. Maybe we'll see some more. Maybe we'll see Google Now in the browser in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, there've been little kind of hints to that kind of merging into Chrome, and I think you're absolutely right. I'd be very surprised if we didn't hear something along those lines, especially considering some of the leaks that we've heard. So you've had the Pixel now for a while. Do you find yourself using it a lot? Like,
you're the only person I know who've actually played with one. So I really want to hear more about this.
Yeah. It's hard to use it full time over something like, you know, a real laptop like the MacBook Pro or something like that. But I've taken it to class a lot and like taken notes with it, and it works perfectly fine for that. So it's not like I'm using a whole ton of features, but I feel like it could have a lot more potential if you could do more of the things that a regular laptop could do, obviously. So, you know, beefing up the Chrome Web Store and having a whole bunch more versatility there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I still wouldn't say it's obviously not at the same level yet as a Windows or OS X laptop, but I think it has the potential to do that, at least for someone like me who's willing to give it a shot.
Yeah.
And that's really where I put up against. I mean, I've got a MacBook Air, you know, and so I've got, you know, it's not, I don't have 3G support or 4G support, so I can't go out into the field and I still need Wi-Fi, you know, but I can, you know, I've got Photoshop on here, and I've got Excel, and I've got Word, and it's all those little. Once I found Pixel or Express, that allowed me to do a lot of Photoshop-like things in the browser, but it's not our Photoshop replacement. I mean, that's,
right.
You know, and so I wonder if it's a generational thing, whether they.
I was going to say that, yeah, it might be the kind of thing where you're not going to, based on what you're used to, are not going to find a replacement anytime soon, right. Although. Web apps are getting pretty darn powerful these days.
They are. Yeah, they are. I know. Pixel Express is amazing. I mean, I sent it to a bunch of friends who can't afford Photoshop but want Photoshop-like ability, and they've all been using it. It's great. You haven't seen it. It's pixlr.com.
Right.
I think /Express or some whatever. Just do Pixel Express. You'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do image manipulation and editing, a lot of stuff you can do in Photoshop.
It open PSD files?
It does open PSD files.
Really?
I have had success opening PSD files. So, yeah. I don't know if there's a compatibility problem there or anything like that, but I the files I had, I was able to open and edit and use. So.
And no weird kind of strange.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
It does layers and all that sort of thing. It's really powerful. It's really interesting. So,
well, and if we're seeing that now, then that only means that, you know, we.
But I can't, I doubt the browser will ever allow me to do really good nonlinear video editing. I mean, to the level, like professional level, although it's close, we have some tools, right? I mean, Marquez, you're laughing at me.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that I was considering. Like, I was going to bring, if I was going to bring a laptop somewhere where I need to edit video, the choice is obvious that it wouldn't be the Pixel. But again, maybe in a couple months, it's possible that we'll see it get that far.
So then I guess the next question would be, if Android was to merge into Chrome, does it enable those things right out of the box?
That's a good question, because you have a whole app, you have a whole app platform to build upon.
Sure. And so you have all the framework of Android aside from just operating entirely off the web, you know, plugins or whatever. Yeah. So I think it would be valuable if it happens. It's not sounding very positive from what Schmidt's saying right here, that it would happen anytime soon. And maybe it won't be necessary. Maybe we'll realize after I.O. exactly what the deal is, because I keep waiting for that aha moment with Chrome OS where I'm like, okay, I get it now. I understand why you're doing this. I get it for Google.
Yep.
Google, it makes perfect sense for them to have everybody, you know, just have a device that taps entirely into their cloud infrastructure. But for the everyday user, I don't get it yet.
Yeah, that's the problem. The device can't be for the company. It's got to be the users, the customers.
Exactly. And then nobody's going to spend $1,500 or however much the Pixel is if it's, a device for the company and not for the user.
Yeah, it's a hell of an expensive web browser.
Yes, it is. All right, well, what else what other cool things do we have coming from Google there, Gina?
Speaking of expensive devices.
Yeah, exactly, right. That would have been the better segue.
Google had run that If I Had Glass contest a few weeks back, where if you tweeted or you posted on Google Plus with the hashtag If I Had Glass and talked about what you would do if you had a pair of Google glasses, Google was going to handpick people who had the best entries. And apparently Google has chosen the recipients. And over the next few days, they're going to let those lucky recipients know that they have won the privilege of paying $1,500 for the Google Glass Explorer Edition, which is the developer prototype that Google made available to Google I.O. attendees last year. Yeah. And actually, this is the same prototype that Jason and I signed up for. They haven't taken our money yet. I haven't heard, there's no word on when this Explorer Edition is actually going to ship. I mean, we're coming up on Google I.O. 2013. I'm shocked that, these devices might not ship, until the next Google I.O. I know I.O. is a little earlier this year than it was last year. What I kind of like about this is that Google's reaching out to these folks on Twitter and on Google Plus, which is kind of cool. And in fact, TechCrunch posted about this, and they actually had a tweet from Project Glass on Twitter, tweeting at replying to someone saying, hey, congratulations, you won.
That's cool.
And it looks like they're probably going to ignore all the snarky tongue-in-cheek If I Had Glass entries, things
they have
like
to. They have to.
Things like, I would take pictures of people's faces and upload them to a massive, advertising company. And, I get brain cancer. There are quite a few snarky remarks.
Now the thing about glass and wondering when they're going to ship. I mean, like, I haven't, and I don't know if you have, but they're out there in the wild. I mean, like, a bunch of my friends went to the Game of Thrones season premiere. That was the premiere event that was.
They're out there high-profile situations.
Events, and there are people fashion. At these events here in San Francisco wearing them. I know a couple of friends of mine who work at Google, who I haven't seen them out with, but they've been out wearing their glasses. So they're out and functioning. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do ship sooner than we think.
I almost feel like at this point, yes, it's a no-brainer that we're going to hear something pretty significant very soon. You kind of feel that ramp up happening right now with all the visibility and this kind of thing being announced. And I almost feel like possibly it being timed with I.O. this year.
Yeah.
And if we haven't heard something by then, we're definitely going to hear something by I.O. where it's like, you guys, a lot of you guys were here last year. We have these other people that got into the Explorer program because of the contest that we just had. Well, here's
what they've done.
We have them here, or something along those lines. Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool walking away from I.O. with them? Yeah. What do you think about glass, Marquez?
Do you have glass?
Yes, right. Yeah. Do you have this yet?
But fingers crossed, because I entered in the Twitter and in Google Plus. I submitted my entries, but obviously I have no idea how good of a chance anyone has of getting in. I've never seen them either. Like, some people say you guys have seen it maybe at an event or something. I guess I don't get out enough, but I've never seen anyone with glass ever in New York City or Hoboken or anywhere. I don't know how much I would actually use Google Glass yet. They have some convincing to do, but this is like a shut up and take my money moment, because I just want to try it, basically.
Absolutely. So Marquez, you need to go down to Chelsea and just hang out around the Google office and see if you see people wearing it and that sort of thing, because they're down there. So yeah.
I think that's
there you go.
I mean, Glass hasn't even been released yet, but there's already some talk about texting while driving laws.
I know, right?
Glass. Yeah. Gary Howell, who's a Republican member of the West Virginia
legislature.
No relation.
Don't blame Jason's uncle. Okay? Come on.
There goes your little.
Nothing to do with
your legislative uncle again, throwing down laws.
He just hates Google.
He's introduced a bill that would amend the state law forbidding texting while driving to also prohibit it, to prohibit using a wearable computer with a head-mounted display, right? Which is exactly what Glass is. So Glass isn't even out yet, and already we're making laws about not being able to use it while driving. Howell's, you know, he's not a Luddite. He's concerned about young people. You know, he's saying young people are super tech savvy are the ones who are most likely to be wearing these glasses, and because it's an open architecture, Glass is, anybody can build apps for them, and there's no guarantee that these apps won't, you know, play you cat videos when you're supposed to be paying attention to the road. So this is a little bit of a concern, you know, because if this passes in West Virginia, this could, you know, kind of spread to other states. And to me, like as a developer, I'm really interested to see what kind of defaults Glass ships with. Like, I think that Google could do really well to, by default, build in a driving mode, right? So, like, Glass should be able to detect when you're moving at a speed that would indicate that you're driving, and then have developers be able to easily, you know, in their apps, you know, easily detect whether or not the person's driving and then behave differently, you know? So even if Glass did something like prevented SMS messages from coming through, or prevented, you know, email from showing up in your heads up display while you're driving, I think that they would do really well with that.
Well, very interesting bit of functionality, Gina. And remember that when we get to the arena. That's all I'm going to say.
We'll put a little teaser. We got a little teaser.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, like, I think some of the changes and the funny thing is that, you know, saying that Glass could be subject to texting while driving laws. What about, like, I don't know, hanging out while driving and writing email while driving? I mean, Glass opens the door to a whole set of new functionality that you can do while you're driving. Where will texting just cover it? Will they have to create laws to protect from Glass in general because of what you'll be able to do with it?
I mean, we have hands-free laws, right? We have computers in our cars. The only difference between this computer and the computers we have in our cars is that this is a heads-up display. So we'd be looking through this text at the road. I mean, one could argue that this is more safe.
But think about it though, because my sister's got one of those minivans that's got the DVD and all the stuff to keep the kids entertained. You'll get one eventually.
When your kids
are old enough.
I'm on my way.
And there's the monitor right in the dashboard, and so I was like, why can't you put the movie on this monitor? And
they don't want
the driver watching it. And so if I get a video message from Jason telling me about the show while I'm driving, yes, I can kind of see through it, but you don't think that's going to hinder my driving ability? I don't know.
Yeah, I think watching video is probably a really bad idea.
But is reading an alert a bad idea? Is using that menu a bad idea? You know, like, again, this goes back to until I put the glasses on and know how it works, I have no idea how it's going to impact my motor functions.
Right.
You know,
Or how difficult it is to see how large or small the text seems, you know, so how much do you really have to concentrate on it?
I don't want to see the recorded video of somebody crashing. Like, think about that. These are the kind of things that you can record video while you're driving. Is that, you know, like, and think about all the pranks and all the stuff like that that's going to come from it. Oh, this is really bad.
I know, but you know,
I just realized how bad for our society this is.
But how does it change, though?
Stop this Glass.
And Ron did an about face.
Totally.
At 20 minutes into the show. How is this any different, though, than looking at a screen that has your GPS stuff on it? Because when I think of Glass and driving, that's what I think of is like, oh, great. Yeah. I can have my GPS. Yeah. I can have a big arrow that says, all right, take a left right here versus having to look down at this thing and try and decipher, especially now that we're using our phones, right? Because used to be that GPS screens were this big, and well, some people have phones this big, but most of us probably aren't mounting our phone that's this big into the dash. And, you know, so there is a little bit of kind of like deciphering what you're looking at while you're driving. So we're always distracted regardless.
I think we need to disclaim my criticisms here. Like, I'm the guy who watches Netflix on my phone while I'm driving home back to the city after the show. So,
and at 22 minutes in, Ron admitted that.
But yeah,
it's
but
a danger. It's you a know, danger.
But I know.
I'm more careful, listening. Please. I'm more listening. I'm not actually watching. I'm more listening. But if you put it right in the steering wheel, it's fine. But it's a challenge. It's a question. So
didn't Google? I think I recall in the last video they put up, they had a video of someone in a hangout while flying a plane. I think it was. So that's a new level of danger. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm scared to death of Google Glass.
Pilots have had heads-up displays for a long time. And totally. Then you think about things like Ford Sync. I mean, to say like, hey, play Adele or you know, text Jason and let him know that I'm in traffic and I'm going to be 10 minutes late for the show. Like, those are all things that we all already do in our cars, often with our hands, often with our eyes lowered, right? Like, so I think Glass has the potential to keep our eyes up more, and it also has the potential to completely distract us. I mean, if Ron's going to watch The West Wing on Google Glass, I'd rather take my bike.
I can't be stopped. Yeah. I can't be stopped, yeah. But at the same time, like, I was in Baltimore a couple weeks ago on business, and we had the GPS and just, like, barking, like, we made the wrong turn, and it's like, turn left now, turn left here, turn right, you know, and it was like, I don't want that flashing at me while I'm driving, so I don't know if the GPS thing is actually the best integration, like,
yeah.
It's gonna be there. Yeah, of course, yeah. Anyway, I mean, this is all TBD until we actually see it and get used in practical experience, but I like the idea of the driving, like, limiting functionality while you're driving.
That's interesting. That's going to be key. I really think that that's going to be key. Whatever Google's defaults are. I mean, if Google makes it so that the framework doesn't support, you know, you can only alert somebody so many times when they're in driving mode, or perhaps like you can't flash things at them, or video playback is disabled, or, you know, like you can build those things into Android, into the API, into the framework to limit what happens when you're driving.
I suppose the challenge there is, how does the Glass determine whether you're a driver or whether you're a passenger?
That's a good question.
When you're moving
that is a good question.
Yeah. Unless it doesn't care.
It's like, you're moving that fast. You don't get it. Period.
Yeah, slow down. You're moving too fast.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of moving too fast, they're not fast enough, actually. There was a time when it felt like the Google Play Store was changing all the time. And then it's kind of settled down. And we've had the same Google Play Store since July of 2011. Which is a really long time.
That's great. Really?
I know. According to this post here on Android Life, it says 2011. But they're starting to be leaks, and now a preview of the new Google Play version 4.0.16, I believe, is the version.
That has to be
That's got to be a typo.
A typo. That must be 2012 because they had the Play Store rebranding.
Yeah.
And didn't it kind of change, or did they just do logo refresh?
I don't remember. We got to go back. But anyway, taking away from the new hotness.
Totally.
Which, if you're watching the video and we missed it, but Chad will play a little video that kind of goes through it. And this is all Android Life. But basically, what you're seeing is a implementation of more of the Google Play Store kind of color coding and branding and approach. Actually, what you've got now is you've got the Google Play Store app catching up with the Google Play Store on the web. The web has really, you know, identified movies and TVs as being that reddish pink. Music is being orange, you know, apps is being gray, books and magazines being blue and purple. Mm-hmm. And now you see that color coding in the Google Play Store. It's not super different. I mean, it's using Holo and it's using, or Holo, whatever you pronounce it.
Holo. Yeah, Holo.
Holo. It's picking up more of that subtle color branding that they've been doing as they've branded the Google Play Store and expanded out into media and beyond just apps. So we don't know when this is going to hit. Although the fact that screenshots and this dude's got it on his phone already, it's been leaked. It's got to be soon. So keep an eye on your Google Play Store. You might have a nice little update there with interesting little textured wallpapers there, as we're showing here in the video.
And some of the screenshots it really feels like it's kind of gelling with what you get on the web, which is kind of interesting that we haven't had that up until now, especially considering the fact that they did the rebranding of the Play Store. The app always kind of looked different than what you got on the site.
Well, because I think it's easier to iterate on the web. And honestly, I've been watching the web, and they're doing more and more like testing and let's see how this looks. Let's see how this doesn't change. And so I guess they've got to a point, okay, this is what we think. We're going to put our best foot forward. And if you go back, Chad, to the screenshots in that article, or have we moved on? Up here, up top, the movies and TV and music one down there. I mean, if you – down a little more. Next one. If you can, you know, and like you see more marketing messages. I mean, here we've got Ryan Gosling unleashed because this dude is hot. You know, if we're going to see more kind of merchandising, which is, I think that's going to be the story of Google Play moving forward. They've built the infrastructure. Now they need to start converting units and selling.
Yeah.
So, really interesting. So we'll see. Stay tuned. Keep an eye on your updates.
Awesome.
Looks like we'll get this before I.O.
Yeah, I think
It seems like I.O. always kind of has Play Store related things, right? Because it's a developer conference and developers want to learn how they make how they can make more revenue, essentially. And there's been some rumors about subscriptions, magazine subscriptions. I feel like we'll see that probably at I.O. But it looks like if this person has it already, that this will probably roll out before then. Because we still got some time before I.O.
We do. Feels like it's right around the corner. But it's still a few months away, not a little bit less than that. But let's take a quick email here. Actually, this is a couple of messages on the same topic of ad blockers. First of all, we heard from Ryan Lexer of CarBuzz, and he says he was at a Google conference last week in Tel Aviv, and Google relies on ads as much as on the iPhone as they do on Android. Basically, he's giving the perspective of the ad blockers from kind of the publisher side, from the developer side. So really great publishers have an ability and talent for using ads that are one, both of perceived value to the user, not disrupting to non-targeted users, and flowing within the design aesthetic of the app. Even if you don't notice them when scaled, many people do notice them and indeed click on them. The payment system to developers is based on clicks. So if ads don't get clicked, they are of little value to anyone in the supply chain. That's kind of something that I've kind of failed to realize sometimes. I'm like, oh, well, if I leave the ads on, that's enough. But,
it's those clicks. That's what
it's those clicks. Yeah. So he says some people are hard to please. They will never be happy. Most likely the same people that sit through TV ads to have the ability to watch their favorite shows on network television. Thanks for your support. If you do see an ad that works for you, click on it. It definitely helps support the devs and their families. Keep up the great work. So that's a great kind of insight from the developer side. And I think that's more or less kind of what we were saying last week. We have on the other side, actually, a visitor who is in the show, in the studio here, Jack Cohen, who submitted a video kind of with I wouldn't necessarily say the other side, but a different perspective. So let's go ahead and play the video.
I think the most important thing to remember about these ad blocking applications is that any user can sideload them onto their phone, even if they're not in the Play Store. All you need to do is have that APK file. So I think these developers need to focus on getting those APK files into the hands of consumers instead of worrying about getting blocked from the Play Store. Thanks for watching. I love the show.
Thank you, Jack. Yeah, that's always kind of the case here, is if you can't find these kinds of apps in the Play Store, Android gives you the ability to sideload.
Yeah, and the reality is that the Google Play Store is not the only game in town. There's GetJar, there's Amazon, there's other app store marketplaces out there. The question, though, is that what are their agreements with Google like, and how long will they persist? Will Google lean on them and say, hey, you really should get those out of there?
Yeah.
Who knows where it will go? But there are alternatives, and if you're savvy enough, you could probably find them. But then again, you know, as someone who's made a living off of creating content and living off of advertising, it's like, if you like what you get and you're getting it for free, you're going to have to, nothing is ever free in this world. You're going to have to pay at some point.
That is very true.
Yeah.
I imagine, Marquez, you could probably agree with that to a certain extent, because I think you kind of make your living right now off of ads. Am I right?
Essentially, yeah. YouTube content creators as a community are definitely really responsive to changes in ads in general. Like anything that happens to ads and the way that affects people, the way people are impressed by them or click them or don't click them, they all notice that. So it's important, pretty important.
Absolutely.
Just a quick thing, like as a developer, I've distributed both an APK, just, hey, download it from this, you know, from this web page. And then I've distributed my app in the store itself. And the big thing that you get with the store is push updates, right? So like with the APK situation, like if I update the app, if there's a giant bug, if I need, you know, if there's a big update or whatever, the users don't get it unless they go and manually sideload again, right? So that's the big advantage of being in the store. But you're right, the Google Play Store is not the only game in town. And that was a Google Play Store policy that those apps violated. That wasn't like an Android policy, right?
Right.
So I think it would be difficult for them to say, oh, these other stores can't distribute this app, like the Amazon App Store or something like that.
Yeah, that's the challenge of the open platform, is that they can't set any rules. You know, like Apple's kept the iOS platform closed and they control everything so they can do those kind of things. But, you know, you don't like what Google Play Store's terms and conditions are, go to Amazon.
Sure.
Yeah.
So. Cool. Well, thank you for writing in, both Ryan and, of course, Jack. Thanks for sending the video and coming in to watch the show.
I love the video emails, and I love that now they're skewing younger. Like, seriously, like, good job. Like, I like it.
We're getting a lot more voicemails and video mail these days, which is great. I
love
that. Let's take a really quick break and thank our first sponsor of today's show, 99 Designs. Spoke about them last week. There's a super cool service. 99 Designs connects the world with great graphic designers. It's all about graphic designers to help you create fast, affordable graphic designs for whatever your project is. Here's how it works. You tell 99 Designs what you need. Dozens of designers from the community on the site will submit quality designs created just for you. And they give the designers your feedback to help them refine their designs. And then you select and pay for your favorite. 99 Designs provides more than 210,000 graphic designers worldwide available to work on your projects. You put up a project and you have instant access to all of those designers. Pretty cool stuff. World-class customer support 24/7 over the phone, as well as email, chat, however you want to get in touch with them. Complimentary design consultations with the San Francisco design team for all of your branding needs, and it's 100% money back guaranteed. They have a lot of different categories that you can do here. Logo design, web design, digital marketing, things like landing pages, Facebook cover designs if you want to kind of bolster up your social network kind of presence online for your company. You can build those unique graphics that hit your landing pages on the different social network services. Print marketing collateral like brochures, flyers, menus, apparel designs. Actually, Twit put out a kind of a call to commission Twit logo designs for our next marketing products. And, you know, they're hitting a lot of different clothing options, sweatshirts, T-shirts, and everything. And we just got pummeled with tons of really awesome work by the graphic designers that are working through the 99 Designs network. Just really cool stuff. And having that kind of easy access for a low cost is just, I mean, it might be exactly what you're looking for when you don't know where to turn when you need that graphic design help. So here's what you can do. You can start right now for as low as $199 for your own custom graphic design. All you have to do is visit 99designs.com/AAA, and you'll get a $99 power pack of services for free. A power pack gives you more designer time, more attention. 99 Designs will actually bold, highlight, and feature your design projects to the 99 Designs marketplace, and you'll get nearly twice as many designs. You can also, if you would like, call 800-513-1678. Designated for the Twit listeners, that's 800-513-1678. And I'll give it to you again here, 800-513-1678. And you can give that a number of call as well and get started. Or just visit 99designs.com/AAA today. And as always, we thank 99 Designs for their support of All About Android and the Twit Network. There's the number. It always helps to see it too. So thank you, Chad. And thank you, 99 Designs. You guys are awesome. We really appreciate it. All right, let's dive into hardware. Android Watch Watch.
I know, we need a new graphic or something.
Watch Watch.
Smart Watch Watch. So all the rumors recently have turned away from phones and from tablets and from things and towards watches. Uh-huh. There's a rumor that Apple is rapidly developing the iWatch, mm-hmm. and for some reason every other consumer electronics company is falling in line. Unbelievably going as far to have an official representative from Samsung actually acknowledge the fact that they are developing one in preparation mm-hmm. for it.
We'd seen a few kind of leaked screenshots. I think even on a previous episode, we showed them.
It's been bubbling up with the Pebble coming out, and a lot of people are excited about the potential of a smartwatch and what can come of it. You throw in a little Apple onto the fire, and it starts to get really kind of exciting. And so you've got over at Samsung, Lee Young Hee, who's the head of Samsung's mobile business, said that we've been preparing the watch for so long. We're working very hard to get ready for it. We're preparing products for the future, and the watch is definitely one of them. The issue, and then to talk about the race to who can get the watch out first, the watch race. Mm-hmm. I feel like we already have watches. How is this a race? The issue here is who will be first to commercialize it so consumers can use it meaningfully. Samsung's throwing their hat into the ring. The Verge was confirming that LG is also throwing their hat into the ring. LG's confirmed the fact that they are developing a watch to compete with Samsung and Apple, and now apparently Google as well.
Yeah, Google's apparently in on this, right? The Android team is building one. This feels like an Onion headline. It's like major tech companies build device that people stopped wearing years ago. Like, it's a weird, it's just like a weird thing. And like, I want to be excited about this. And I have to tell you, I'm most excited about Google building a watch. Partly because I'm a fangirl, partly because they built Android, so they'll know how to, I feel like they'll know how to do it very, very well. Also partly because they have patented this flip-up design. Yeah. So, yep. You flip it up and there's like a transparent flip up cover and they're both tactile. They both have tactile. So I just like the idea of like flipping my watch up because I think it just looks kind of badass and Star Trek-y or whatever. Yeah. But honestly, I'm not that excited about the smartwatch. I mean, the Pebble has gotten sort of lukewarm reviews right so far. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I feel as if I actually haven't seen a Pebble in the wild other than what we saw at I.O. last year, so I haven't seen the latest updates, but I feel like everything I've been reading about it makes me want to see it. I don't currently wear a watch for numerous reasons. It just, you know, if I used to fiddle with it and all that sort of stuff, so I don't know if I'd actually, it would have to really be meaningful to change over. But from what I've heard, the Pebble is enough to get excited about that makes me believe that everyone's going in this direction.
Yeah.
All right, Marquez, I have to ask, does an Android watch, like, does that get you excited? Is that something that you've always wanted or dreamed of having a computer on your wrist?
Well, the watch concept isn't, I don't wear a watch. I check the time with my phone, obviously, like pretty much everyone else. But I still would be excited to see what they would do to make an Android watch. Like, what is that? What would that entail? I would like to see it, but... don't know if I could justify buying a watch just because it has Android on it, but I probably will.
Or because it syncs to your Android. Wasn't it the Sony watch a year or two ago?
We talked about the Sony. It was like a year ago. Nicole was here, and she showed us this watch that paired with your phone.
Right.
And was pretty,
it was a tethering situation.
Thing. Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't like running its own OS necessarily.
Yeah. And the potential of this is that these are independent devices. I mean, like, so Engadget had the Google smartwatch flip-up design that Gina mentioned. And if you haven't seen it, it's really interesting. Chat, I don't know if we can pull that up. It's an interesting approach to a flip-up and then an interactive display and, you know, understanding what they've done with Project Glass. I think Google could potentially take Android and take something like this and make it really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like Marquez, I'm not going to wear a watch unless it's really going to monumentally change my world. And if I can get texts and if I can get stuff on that, that's pretty cool.
I'm probably totally in the dark in this one, but I almost feel like the watch concept with computer, the smartwatch concept isn't necessarily for us. It's not for us because we've done the watch and we already kind of have a sour taste in our mouth and we're like, well, we're old school. We don't have a watch anymore. We have a phone. The phone replaced the watch. But the watch is for like the folks coming up that are like, I've never had anything on my wrist, but to have all that power on my wrist, that sounds like something I would be interested in.
Between glass and the watch, we're stumbling upon the technology generation gap.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Yeah. Yes,
this
exactly.
We're forever going to use laptops and use our phone for alarm clocks, right? I mean, like, this is what it is. We're just ingrained, but the next generation, like Jack, he's going to be wearing an Android watch, and it's going to be like...
What do you think about an Android watch? Are you going to want one? Yeah, probably.
He's smiling and nodding. Yeah, absolutely.
I understand.
But wait, these watches are going to Bluetooth to your phone, right? It's not like this is going to replace your phone.
Sure.
Right? So this is going to be connected. So you're going to have to have both.
It's the tethering situation again. Right.
So what do you have there, Gina?
This is not a smartwatch. This is an iPod Nano, right? This is an iPod Nano. This just looks like a watch. It's a touchscreen watch, right? It's not smart. It's just a touchscreen watch. And I bought this, on Kickstarter, like the watch band to put the Nano. And it was interesting. Like I was like, oh, this is cool. Like I have apps on my wrist. That's kind of cool. I didn't get text messages or anything. But I got to this place where I was like, this is another thing that I have to like charge and worry about it going to sleep.
Oh,
like
totally.
Now I'm really going to show the technology gap and like show how old I am. I'm like suffering from a little bit of like gadget overload because every time you introduce a new gadget into your life, you're dealing with a new set of batteries, a new set of chargers, another thing to like worry about breaking or dropping or getting stolen, someone getting into your accounts. Like, so I'm just like, I don't know if I could deal with like just the maintenance and just the mental friction that comes along with keeping track of this like super expensive device, on my person. It's particularly the wearable stuff, right? Particularly glass and the watch, right? Because people can see it and it's going to just sort of everyday use of bumping into things and rubbing on things and having to deal with going to my pocket. So I don't know. I'm feeling like these companies are coming up with things to build you know, that people don't necessarily want, but just because they want to ship something new. Like, it feels more like a marketing thing than this is really going to change the world. I don't know. I don't mean to be so negative. But.
Well, no, it's funny because, like, my first reaction to that whole thing is like, I don't know, if I could just wear a watch and be able to get my email and be able to, like, not have to worry and, like, about carrying something. Like, my whole thing is, for some reason, as I get older, and maybe I'm crazy, I don't want things in my pockets. I'm just tired. Like, I'm tired of carrying cash. Like, I'm tired of carrying my wallet. Like, I just want things to work. And that's why I love Google Wallet, because I just go to 7-Eleven and I just tap it, I get my Snapple, and life is good. But then I realized it would be great to get, like, you know, be able to get texts and stuff like that. But then if I've got to respond, like, I have a hard enough time typing on the keyboard on this 5-inch phone, or 4.7-inch phone.
Voice.
Yeah. Voice.
Voice.
Happens
right,
off.
But then how does that work? So then it's Star Trek. Then you're talking into the, you know.
Like, exactly.
Right, yeah. Oh, it's too, my head hurts.
Keep me up.
Yeah.
It's going to be weird when a typo happens. You go, no, select from this to that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the copy and paste. Yeah, how long did it take us to copy and paste on the phones?
Backspace.
And then when you got, let's
the damn you autocorrect.
Yeah, exactly. And then let's look at the realities. You're going to have a bunch of kids running around going, OMG, WTF, CULHR. You know, like, it's going to be like.
Into the watch. Make sure you don't tell mom that we're going to come home late.
It's just, what was that, honey?
This is a Cory Doctorow novel. And I don't know if I like it. I'll be honest with you.
But, but I think we're on to something. We need to really write this because I think it could go somewhere. Wow. Yeah. That kind of makes my head spin a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what else makes my head spin a little bit? Just a little bit, only because I'm hoping you guys can help clarify it a little bit, is T-Mobile's new data plans.
Oh, I can help clarify it.
Okay, good. All right. So the short of it is that T-Mobile launched, well, first of all, they had a big announcement this morning. They launched LTE in 7 markets. Officially, they launched it in 7 markets. And they are offering new plans. So they're basically kind of touting the fact that they're contract free, essentially. And their new plans. You can buy one of their best phones for around $99. And that does include the HTC One that's coming out, the Galaxy S4. Those are both considered best phones. And that will cost you $99. But if you get one for that price, you still have to pay $20 per month.
Up front. Yep.
Every month to kind of until the full value of the device is paid off. Yep. Then on top of that, the new plans, $50 for a line, $10 for additional lines, $10 for 2 gigs of 4G data, $20 for unlimited. Some of this we've kind of heard a little bit before in the Ron Rant segment of episodes past. But I don't know. It still kind of seems somewhat contracty, though.
Well, right? The thing is that it's not so much contracty, because if you want to leave, you can leave. You've just got to pay off your balance.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of like an installment plan, almost like an advance, like that sort of thing. You know, and which is, I get it. Their whole marketing shtick now is unlimited data, unlimited plans, no contract. So if you want to walk, you can walk. So I bought my phone from the Google Play Store, and I've got no contract. And if I want to pull out the SIM card and pop in an AT&T SIM card, I can do that.
And this is my last month, and
yeah, exactly,
no penalty.
Which is great. And
yeah, that's
fine.
Nice.
And I think that's cool. Except that they just stop short of being good, because they back from when I ran into my data problem. The response that I got from T-Mobile customer service does not change with this announcement. I was hoping that it would change, but it didn't. And that is, T-Mobile is a mobile carrier, and we are not an ISP. So they do not want their data network to be serving other devices other than this phone that you're paying in installments. So one of the details is that you can add tethering, but it's limited to 2.5 gig. And then you can, and I believe you can actually pay in increments of $10 more to get more data through tethering, but they'll cap you and they'll slow you down when you hit that level like they did to me, because they only want you using their phone. They keep saying we're a phone network. And if you've built this robust LTE network and this 4G network, let it go. Let people do whatever they want with it. I would gladly pay $80 a month to do that. I mean,
the network wants to roam free,
exactly.
Man.
Exactly. You can't hold the network back. I mean, Marquez, what do you make of all this?
I haven't actually been up to date on, at least today, because I've been so busy today that I haven't seen a lot of the news on the T-Mobile stuff. But I was really tempted, like, earlier in the year by, I guess it was T-Mobile's $30 a month, you know, unlimited data and unlimited text and like 100 minutes
per month. This is the next generation of that plan. Yeah,
exactly. So I was definitely interested in all the headlines I'm seeing are very positive, and I'm excited for what it sounds like it is. But I have to read more into it to figure out if it's as good as it sounds.
Well, and that's a great point, which is because, and again, we talked about this before the show. I am not the average user. I don't think any of us are. I use a lot of data. I don't think the normal person uses that much data. 2.5 gig is a lot of data to transfer through a phone, through a wireless thing. So maybe it's fine, and maybe I'm just the outlier, and I'm a cranky old man because I want unlimited data, you know. And I can't seriously. I've got 45 meg down at home from Comcast, and it's not fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and so maybe it's just that one of those things we're keeping up with the Joneses type thing, and maybe this is the perfect plan, and this is they want to be the uncarrier. Isn't that their term? Like the, you know, so I don't know. Maybe it's a step in the right direction. That said, all my complaining about T-Mobile. I'm still a loyal customer. I'm still with them. I'm not leaving.
Right.
Because nobody's got it better. So.
Yeah. I complain all the time about Verizon. I'm still Verizon.
Yeah, you do. Leaving Verizon was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah, that's what I keep hearing.
I can't even tell you.
Very curious, Marquez, what is your phone of choice and what network are you on?
I have two lines, but my main line is a Verizon Galaxy S3.
Okay.
And I have a Straight Talk line with AT&T right now that I was considering a T-Mobile plan, but I have an Oppo Find 5 on AT&T right now.
Oh, what do you think of that? I hear little bits about that recently,
It's pretty good. I actually like it. There are some phones that have been hit or miss. This one fits me well. I also happen to love the 5-inch screen size, so I'm a fan of the 5-inch displays, and it's 1080p, so I like pixels. Pixels are good.
Yeah.
So, lots of pixels. I like that. It's fast, obviously. The S4 Pro is great, and AT&T works well in my area. That's the other thing I was considering, is because T-Mobile doesn't have the best coverage, at least in my area. In the tri-state area, I happen to live in Hoboken, which got mediocre T-Mobile service when I tried it. So,
yeah, and their LTE network is obviously at this point not really built out. It's very, very early stages right now. So it's, kind of hard to find that. What is it? They say LTE in 90% of the top 25 markets, 200 million people covered by the end of the year. But they're totally playing catch up right now. So if it's not there right now, it might improve, but it also might not the next year.
Well, moving on, here in San Francisco, actually, this week is that time of year. It's the GDC, Game Developers Conference. So there's a ton of video game developers coming down to San Francisco, and you're going to see a lot of gaming news over the next week. But one particular note that affects the Android audience is you've probably heard about Ouya. This is this kind of low-cost platform built on the gaming platform built on Android. I believe it went through a Kickstarter.
Yeah, it was through Kickstarter. It was one of the most successful Kickstarters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of my friends is actually an advisor for them and is very excited about this. But cool. Some interesting news coming out with the speculation that when Ouya launches, it will launch with support for game emulators for Nintendo Entertainment System, Super Nintendo, or Nintendo 64.
Built into it,
right, yeah. Exactly. So now why is this important? Now, it's interesting because game emulators themselves are, if you don't know, it's an app that allows you to emulate the gaming system on another device. So, for example, if I had a SNES game emulator on my phone, I could play Super Star Wars like I did on my SNES back in 1994. That's great because you've got old fogies like me who like to play the video games of our youth all the time. And so it allows you to go back and, you know, kind of play those older games. Plus also some of the most classic and like best video games ever were on those Street Fighter 2 on Super Nintendo, Mario Kart and Nintendo 64, like these are GoldenEye. These are great games. The problem with it is that, a lot of those games themselves, the ROMs to play those games are actually still copyrighted, and it's illegal to download them and play them pursuant to copyright law.
Yeah.
But emulators aren't illegal. So it's kind of a legal gray area, but by having the emulators on the Ouya when it launches means somebody like me is more likely to pick one up because I'm like, oh, cool, I can go play these ROMs that I have that I got illegally. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. Normally you see platforms like this shy away from the emulators because of the legal gray area.
Yeah, but totally.
Because it's built on Android, because it's kind of an open kind of platform, maybe Ouya is going to embrace it, and that could be the thing that kind of helps them. So.
There's no legitimate way to get... Sorry, this is totally out of my... I'm not much of a gamer at all. But there's no legitimate way to get the ROMs?
Nope. No. There are ways to get the ROMs. It's just not... Right. It is not legal because...
I mean, you can't go to a store and be like, I want to purchase this ROM and download it. Nope. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have the emulator and then you just kind of like leave it up to the user to figure out where the ROMs come from.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's kind of like the pipe... slash pot store, right, or something, you know, that whole right analogy. I slaughtered
it. Right,
the pot the store.
Right, right.
All right, okay, I got that right, a little so twisted. Right. Thank you, Ron.
You can all go right buy a water pipe somewhere.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. That's what I'm thinking. The tobacco store is what I meant to say. Damn it.
Well, we are in California. Saying,
well, we are, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's although we're not in Seattle here or Colorado, where apparently it's much
tobacco easier store is right what I meant store to say.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You can tell Jason Howell smokes a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of tobacco.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah, exactly. Anyway,
a lot of stores. I don't even
know the name of this.
Oh, boy. Fantastic. Yes. Yeah, so Ouya's coming out soon. I'm trying to get my hands on one. So if I can get my hands on one, I'll bring it in and we'll play with it and check it out.
All right,
so it's
cool
coming out soon. So
it's interesting for them to allow that to be pre-installed on the device and quit your. I'm going to go ahead. And
they're targeting like an older audience, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, are they targeting older users? And they're targeting obviously power users. They're targeting people who cared about gaming.
Well, they're targeting gamers. I have a buddy who is a gamer, and he's not necessarily an Android power user or anything like that. But he came over and hacked my Wii to let me run Nintendo emulators. You know what I mean? Like people love that stuff. I mean, hell, I was playing on the Xbox over the weekend. I was playing the old X-Men side scroller that they ported over to Xbox Live Arcade. This is a huge. I was playing it my Intellivision emulator on my computer. I mean, like these are, while all the games that come out now, there is a huge population of people who would jump to play at the original Super Mario Brothers.
And it's funny because Gina brought up a good point that there really isn't a legal place to get these ROMs. Like why can't there be a Steam like service where you buy a ROM from Nintendo? They know that you're getting it, and it's a legal, a legal purchase.
I mean, can you only buy, like, the cartridges from back in the day? I mean,
right. So you could buy a cartridge, and then if you knew the hack around, you could take the ROM out of the cartridge.
Right.
Yeah. It sort of boggles. It seems like a good idea to sell those legitimately, like, from Nintendo. It seems like a good way for them to make money on games that were made in, like, the 80s. It's just, like, it's just gravy at this point.
There's got to be some royalty or some business thing that gets in the way with it, or licensing. Like, they can license those games to be ported to, like, Steam or to something like that. Like, but the fact is that they're rampant. It's a section of piracy that is not going away. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, it's totally interesting. So.
All right, let's take a quick break and allow me to reset a little bit. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Gazelle. If you're liking the sound of all these, you know, devices that we talk about on the show, and you have a device and you want to get rid of it, Gazelle might be the way to go. You can basically go to gazelle.com and use their site to pick the device that you have. They make it really easy for you. They give, you know, they break it out by carrier. They break it out by, do you have an iPhone, cell phone, iPad, iPod? You can sell your MacBook, your Mac. They just take you through step by step and allow you to kind of pick, oh, I have a Samsung device and it's on Verizon and, you know, it's the Galaxy S3. And so you can kind of go through, pick your device. They'll give you an offer based on the description that you give them of the condition that it's in. Is it in flawless condition? Is it free of water damage? It is. You click calculate. And they'll pop up a number. And basically, that number that they give you right then is locked in for 30 days. So you have that quote locked in. Even if you're not ready to send the device into them quite yet, it's a lock for 30 days. So you can lock in that price right now. And then when you're ready to send it in, they will send you a box. You just drop it in the box, send it off, and boom. Once they receive it, they check the condition of the device. If it matches up with what you said, they give you the payment. It's that easy, and that allows you to turn the gadgets that you might not be using anymore that are kind of collecting dust or in your drawer somewhere, get some cash for those and turn that into some new gadget to lust over for the next year and use. Gazelle has paid $50 million to over 500,000 customers just because it's easy. They make the process simple. Free shipping, all that kind of stuff. It's pretty much a no-brainer at this point. So you just have to check it out to see what you can get for those gadgets. So here's what you do. What is your iPhone, your iPad, your Android smartphone? What are they worth? Go to gazelle.com. Take a minute to find out. Use their site. And you can sell your device, your smartphone today at gazelle.com by doing just that. So take a look, gazelle.com.
I have no intentions to sell any of them, but every now and then I like to look to see what my devices are worth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
What can I get for it?
And you know, and if you do that, after a while, you'll notice that the price of the device ends up going down because they're not gaining value necessarily. True. They're losing value
over
time.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you actually want to sell it, now is the time to do it. So gazelle.com. All right, let's see here. Let's take a quick email. Runnin' Rep wrote in to say, just broke down and bought a Nexus 7. Been a follower of various Twitch shows, but now I have the reason to follow All About Android. I love it. Want to know the best way to charge the battery for the longest life. Is it okay to charge it overnight, or in other words, overcharge it? Saw a post recently on an Android forum that said, I charge mine with a cable provided connected to a powered USB hub that is connected to my computer. It charges overnight, even with the computer turned off. Charges slower than the provided 2-amp charger, but that is better. Slower charging causes less battery heat and longer battery life. And he asks, do you agree? I'm not like the biggest expert on battery necessarily, but I did kind of search around. But first, I'm kind of curious.
We're going around the horn. What does everybody
do? Yeah, yeah.
I'll start.
I never considered the thought of slow charging. I just throw it in my fastest charger and forget about it.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm plugged in via USB to the wall, and I plug it in when I go to bed, and I unplug it when I wake up.
And then I have the same scenario
at work. Although, Gina, I am going to get the orb that I can charge, the Nexus 4
nice.
Orb. But And if I see my battery dip around 50% by midday, I'll charge it up because I go out at night and stuff like that. But that's all I do.
Yeah.
Simple. So, Gina, how do you charge?
Really straightforward too. I basically just charge overnight the tablet on the phone and take it with me. If I work at home, but sometimes I work out of an office away from home, I'll keep a charger there as well, just because you don't want to get to like 6 o'clock when you're about to go out and meet friends and be really low on battery, especially it's the worst when you're like, yeah. But pretty just straightforward. I honestly hadn't thought about the USB hub bit about it. You know, Kevin Purdy wrote a piece for Lifehacker on this app called Battery Doctor, which I've been testing out. It's this really, really detailed like recommendation of like, here's the state your battery's in, here's how much time you have left, like you should charge it for about this amount of time at this time of day. Like, it's super, super specific about instructions, and I came to this place where I'm just like, I can't care about my battery this
yes.
much. Like,
yeah,
like
totally.
This device is here for me, and I've had this rant before, like this device is here to serve me. Like, I can't spend my life worrying about like how to best care for my battery. Like, I'm gonna use this device the way I use it. I'm gonna make sure that it's charged when I can overnight, you know, in a reasonable amount of time, and then I'm gonna move on.
But it's funny because I think about it sometimes, because I hate being that guy who's walking around my charger looking for an outlet, you know, and like, and especially when I'm out and I'm like at a club or something, like, or I'm at a bar or something like that, and you're like, hey, can I borrow you? Because it's like you're stealing kind of in a way, and it's just, I don't, you know, and like, and for a while with my last phone, like I'd use my battery up and it was dying, so I was just carrying around a USB cable, and like I used to plug it into my laptop in my bag and slow charge it that way, and it's just, there's nothing worse than knowing you're about to go out for like 5 hours
yeah.
and you've got 20%. Battery and your
yeah.
life is texting people to tell you where you are, and you're not gonna
exactly.
be able to do it. Yeah, so
that's true.
Do you, Marquez, do you care enough about the longevity of your battery to slow charge it all the time? And
I used to pay a lot of attention to it, to be
yeah.
honest. I read a lot of Lifehacker articles and all kinds of stuff about, again, like the health of your battery and whether or not you can overcharge and whether you're damaging it by charging it for too long. But eventually I stopped paying attention to that, and I've honestly not seen any sort of significant difference in my battery performance. So, I mean, I use 2-amp chargers all around, so I'll probably end up overcharging, or what they say, the batteries. But I actually use the Pogo charger in the Nexus 10, which charges, you know, the Pogo pins on the bottom, which charges faster than the USB does. So I use that just because it's faster. But otherwise, I just drop it on the charger at night and wake up in the morning and take it off. And
That's the thing, is that you want to live free, and you don't want to have
yes.
to worry about that stuff.
But it's kind of like the email that we answered last week
about my
first smartphone, but I don't want it to break. It's
right.
Like,
yeah.
But
the
thing about it, though, is that I have noticed, especially moving from the Galaxy Nexus to the Nexus 4 in the past couple of weeks, by the end of the life on my phone, when I upgrade to a new phone, I always can tell that, like, oh, wow, I drained the hell out of this battery, and I probably mm-hmm. should have replaced it at some point.
Yes.
Yeah, I like, with that Galaxy Nexus, I was lucky if I got to noon on a full charge when I woke up in the morning.
Because
I'm using it on my commute, and I'm an active user and that sort of thing. And so I definitely noticed a downgrade in the battery life. So
mm-hmm.
it's true. Mm-hmm. It does happen. It's just I don't care.
So. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And yes, it is true that heat is bad for battery, and yes, that will eliminate. It's just like how much time do you really want to devote yourself to getting, because you'll never know the other side of it. Oh, what do you have there? Oh,
I've been rocking a gigantic, but not so gigantic, extended battery on my Galaxy S3.
That's enormous.
Wow.
It seems like it's enormous at first, but the Galaxy S3 by itself is so thin, and my finger just kind of rests like right in the crevice there.
Yeah.
I think it's a 4,600 milliamp hour battery.
Wow. So
let me see. Okay. It's,
and does it
it's
also double? Does it also double Nine. Double as a surfboard?
Well, it does have a kickstand.
Oh, nice. There you go.
So that's helpful for if you're watching video or something. I have 71% battery left, and it's 9 p.m. Eastern time.
And you've not...
Wow.
Dang, man.
And also, like, I would suggest something like this where it's $23. It's worth it just to keep it in the coat that you normally take out. This is a external battery that has like a micro USB a detachable, you know, it's built into the battery. It's $23. It's super easy to just to keep that in the jacket pocket that you normally go out with.
My bag or
right.
Like, I always
put it
have
in your backpack,
bag.
Put it in your car. Yeah. It's so inexpensive that it's just worth the peace of mind to buy something like that.
Yeah. Wow.
It's cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. All
let's
right.
Let's get into some apps.
Let's bust out some apps.
Right after the show last week, and in fact, right before This Week in Google started on Wednesday on this network, which I co-host with Leo and Jeff, Google announces a brand new note-taking app called Keep. It's Google Keep. So you go to google.com/keep to check, or sorry, drive.google.com/keep to check it out on the web. And there's also an Android app called Keep, available for Android 4.0 and up. You can find that in the Play Store. If you just search for Google Keep in the Play Store, it'll come right up. And essentially, it's just a kind of note-to-self app. It's an easy way, using your voice or using text or just snapping a picture, to upload a bit of text or a checklist or a photo or some kind of note-to-self type of thing. And Keep notes are stored in Drive. And it's, you know, I have to say, the Android app, like I said, it's only available for Android. It's not available for iOS or any other platform right now. It syncs back to Keep and Drive really, really fast. So if you're typing a note in your web browser, like in Chrome, and you have the app open on your Android phone, you'll see keystroke for keystroke the note update on in the Android app. And the Android app is really nice looking. It has that Google Now-ish kind of card layout. You can change each card colors. You can set card colors. You can archive cards, which is kind of Gmail-ish. I don't know, this Google Keep looks built for Google Glass to me. You know, like, I'm just imagining having Glass and being like, hey, keep this note. Take a picture and keep it. I've got a pretty well-developed note-taking system with Evernote and with Dropbox. So I tried out Keep, and I kind of like it. I'm a little gun-shy about adopting a new Google app at the moment, especially after the Google Reader thing.
Right, but how many years did it take for Google Reader to get shut down? This has got at least 4 years.
This is going to be around for years.
Yeah,
exactly.
Come on. But I mean, what I think is, as a loyal Evernote user, I really got to wonder if this is an Evernote killer. And actually, Gina, I'm curious, is this a to-do.txt killer?
I mean, you know, it's certainly you can do checklists, right? Yeah. So you can certainly keep a to-do list in. But you know what? There are gazillions of to-do lists.
Yeah.
You know, mine has the kind of the plain text angle on it. It doesn't quite do that. But yeah, sure, you can use this as a to-do list. It looks very kind of sticky note-ish on your phone. It's got a really nice widget. So, I mean, certainly this is a kind of personal task list app. It doesn't sync to Google Tasks, though. Yet. I don't know. Maybe it will eventually. Google Tasks is one of those undersung, like, very, you know, not used very much. It doesn't have its own Android app. So, I if Keep sunk to Tasks, I would feel a little bit more like, oh, this is Google's, to-do manager.
I was going to say, after Reader, now every forgotten bit of Google functionality, you got to wonder what a shelf life looks like.
Yeah.
Whether Tasks will still be around, or will it change into Keep? And, you know,
I know,
what was that, Marquez?
I was going to say, after Reader got shut down, I was unusually weary because I'm an unusually heavy a user of Google Tasks, even though it doesn't have an official app anywhere except for in that little Gmail corner window.
Yeah.
But I use it like on all of my platforms, so I just kind of... Well,
that's like the other rumor I saw, everyone's worrying about Google Alerts now. Apparently now the Eye of Mordor, the Eye of Larry is on Google Alerts that they might be getting killed soon because it's just one of those legacy functionalities that is just hanging out there on a branch and maybe nobody's really doing active development. But what's interesting about Google Keep, to get it back on topic, is that this shows to me the potential of Google's in-house develop app. Like, their apps are getting nice.
They're
leveling up on the design.
Absolutely.
So. And I think one of the good things about Google Keep is that it's built on Google Drive, judging purely from the URL. It's drive.google.com/keep, and it's using Drive's new real-time API, which I think we reported on last episode. So I feel like this is kind of Google being like, hey, look, developers, here's what you can do with Drive. And that's the one thing that makes me feel like this isn't going to go anywhere anytime soon, because Drive isn't going anywhere.
Right, and this is another component of Drive. Yeah, just a few quick things before we move on from this. Using Google Now, you can say note to self, blah, 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 and instead of that opening up into an email in your Gmail app now, it actually adds a Google Keep note. So that's pretty cool. The other thing, and I think you mentioned this, Gina, is the voice input. So you can, there's a little microphone, and you can click it and do voice input, and it'll actually transcribe it as it records the audio and keep both of those attached to the note. The problem that I have with this, and the thing that's going to keep me from using it for right now, is the fact that you can only record words. If you try and record anything that isn't talking or words, it says, I can't understand you, and it doesn't record it. And I want to be able to record audio.
Why don't you just tell me the name of the movie you want to see?
Yeah, that's right. Like, I've talked about it on the show in the past. I use Evernote for music, kind of music ideas. And a lot of times that's just me, you know, humming a little melody or something so that I don't forget it. And I can't do that with Keep. And that'll keep me from using it, unfortunately, for now. But I really like it, and it's designed really well. And I hope that they kind of improve that. I'm sure that they will. They better.
I just took a picture because I installed Keep and I haven't used it yet. Uh-huh. So I took a picture and I just added it, and I was titling the picture, and I said talking about Google, and then SwiftKey's automatic recommendation for the word after Google was Reader.
Too soon.
Yeah, too soon. Exactly. Well, speaking of Google and their app development, there was also an update that came out to the Google Plus app. Some of you might have noticed they upgraded the quality of posts within the app. They've added in some community management and location sharing. So similar to, do you remember Google Latitude? Do you remember that scary as heck functionality?
And it's still in there.
Yeah, it's still in there. Leveraging some of the Google Latitude-like functionality, you can share your location with certain circles. So if you have a family circle or close friend circle, you can let them know where you actually are at any time, which is kind of interesting. The community management stuff, they've been beefing up the community aspect of Google+, so now you can administer it from the app. And then they've also made some tweaks to, they've got a new design for the stream, including comment previews and swiping through photo albums in line. You can control the volume of posts that you see in your stream from individual circles or communities. And you can filter out results by best or most recent. So little tweaks and as they continue to improve Google Plus and make it a pretty good social networking application. So good to see them still developing. I like the look of what they're doing. Everything looks great. I mean, Jason, you got the app here. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, I have it. It's interesting because my phone's all the way down here. Sorry, it's going to be blurry when you blow it up. But it's interesting because they have now this little kind of ticker on the bottom that'll kind of scroll through. That says, yay, Marquez is on All About Android tonight. A little ticker that'll scroll through the last kind of couple comments and who it's attached to and everything. But yeah, they're really just kind of, with every iteration, refining the design. Man, it makes me think about where it started, where it was all of those big screenshots all sandwiched together. And it was hard to know when one screenshot ended and the other one began. And it was so confusing to look at. It's just a lot more clean now. And they're definitely coming a long way with it. So. Where it's headed.
I feel like that app is the forefront of Google design.
Yeah.
Google Android design.
We certainly have a lot to gain from it. So.
For sure. So excellent. All right. So we got one last sponsor in this marathon of All About Android sponsorships. We want to thank Hulu Plus for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. If you're a longtime watcher of the show, you know that I love watching television. Both Eileen and I were big TV heads, and we're always talking about it. Hulu Plus is one of those ways that I get to watch so much TV. I don't have cable at home, and so I watch all my TV online, and Hulu Plus is a large part of it. It's a fast and easy way to get all your favorite shows. Hulu Plus is available for connected TVs, Blu-ray players, gaming consoles. So if you've got a PS3 or an Xbox 360, set-top boxes, Apple TV, Roku, mobile phones, tablets, and more. Basically, everything you can do online and on Hulu, you can with Hulu Plus and the applications, you can leverage that over. So if you got favorites, if you got subscriptions, those sort of things are all able to do it. You can basically take your viewing experience and bring it across platform and to across different devices. Hulu Plus gives you access to current season hit shows from networks like Comedy Central, Fox, NBC, ABC, and more. And you can watch, you know, The Daily Show, The Colbert Report, The Office. They've got older episodes of great TV shows like Firefly and Arrested Development. I watch New Girl and Community on it all the time. Those are some of the shows I watch on it. If you're into wrestling, they've got Monday Night Raw. They've got a little bit of something for everybody. And it doesn't just stop at TV. They've got classic TV shows and full seasons, but they've also got movies and great stuff for that. So Hulu Plus is really, like, you'll never not have anything to watch if you've got Hulu Plus. So there's always something playing. So great offer for viewers of All About Android. If you go to HuluPlus.com/twit, that's HuluPlus.com/twit, and sign up, you get an extra free week when you try Hulu Plus. And so you get a free 2-week trial instead of just one. So here we are. We're giving you a week of free TV, unlimited, just at HuluPlus.com/twit. And we want to thank Hulu Plus for their support of All About Android and Twit, and keep watching TV and keep enjoying Hulu Plus.
Boom.
How many times can I say Hulu Plus?
One more time.
Hulu Plus.
One more time.
Yes. So. That's the one that I needed right there.
I'm very excited for this part of the show. I'm very excited.
Oh, boy. By the way.
All right. Are you ready?
We're ready.
Are you ready?
Throwdown.
Fire it up, Chad.
I'm not ready. Something's wrong.
Chad's
not ready. Something's wrong with the video.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Well, then we're just going to have to, you know, we're just going to have to go with the other one then.
I guess.
Oh, I was all excited for the audience to see
it. This is a tease to next week.
Dang it.
It's all right.
This is the worst thing that ever happened to me.
Oh, man.
No, something's going on.
Out of Chad's ears right now.
Wow.
It's okay. I feel your pain, Chad. This was me this morning.
I built it up. I'm sorry, man.
Here we go into the arena.
So many but only one left. Android Arena.
Dramatic arena.
Was that like our first major fail on the show?
Wow.
I mean, it was, yeah. So for the with teasing, you can look forward to an interesting new look to the Android arena coming up.
Possibly.
So, possibly, in case we can ever get it to work.
Yes. We've got some awesome.
If that was a major fail, we're doing great.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, that's not too bad.
I have high expectations, Chad. Gina. I don't suffer fail lightly. So.
All right. So first of all, let's take a look at last week's poll. Episode 101 last week. And we had 4 apps in the arena. And taking a look, it looks like messaging plus Google Voice wins with 36%.
Now, wait a minute. I looked at this a couple hours ago, and Key Keyboard had a huge lead.
Yeah.
It was like a dramatic lead.
Yeah. It was a solid lead. I wouldn't say dramatic, but it was certainly a solid
lead. It was enough.
Lead.
It was enough of a chunk of the bar.
It was. Yeah. I swear I did not mess with that. Yeah. I did not mess with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. This keeps happening.
All I know, this is all I know. She's new to the show. She's a developer. It's a web application that does polls. I'm thinking there's shenanigans.
Oh, yeah. Well, if it's any consolation, Gina, I have it installed. Messaging plus Google Voice. I've paid the $5 for the premium version, and I use it every day.
Did you vote for it?
I don't really vote in the arena.
You don't vote in the arena?
No.
Oh, I vote like 20 times for my.
Oh,
no,
that
I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
I have my army of bots who vote, but I don't actually.
Right, it's not me. It's just my finger.
Did not touch that poll.
I'm telling you, Gina, I got my haircut. Everything's gonna change now. This is what's going on? It's a new world.
Well, I'm showing up now. Yep. He's showing up. I gotta mind my P's and Q's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've been on since he's had a haircut. It's kind of crazy. Messaging plus Google Voice wins. Key Keyboard is a close second at 34%. City Island, third place at 20%. And The Walking Dead, Dead Yourself, because there's other apps that do that kind of thing probably. And, you know, messaging plus Google Voice, like, that's a problem that really needed to be solved. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So don't take it personally, Ron.
I won't.
All right. I shouldn't either because it was
I wish you did The Walking Dead app this week because I actually have the next issue in my bag.
It's been
out for 2 weeks, so I could have gone, ooh. But no, yeah.
Well, I'm doing something that's just a little bit different. I don't really go out a whole lot these days and share and go out eating, you know, at restaurants with tons and tons of friends. But I know when I did, one of the things that was always a challenge is when you're out with a group of friends that isn't just cool on, let's just split it six ways. You're with friends that are like, no, I want to just pay for the things that I have.
So you mean in your 20s?
Yeah, right. There we go.
Yes, hey. Totally. Hey. I resemble that.
Yeah,
you do resemble it, yeah.
So I chose an app that allows you to kind of pick through that chaos a little bit. It's called Going Dutch, and it's it only has like 100 downloads on it right now. It's totally a new app, and I just thought it was kind of a cool way to kind of approach this. Basically, it's an app that I think first of all, right off the top, the downside is it takes a little bit of time to enter some of this stuff in. But the good thing is,
look at that spinning.
I know. I don't know why it's doing that. Of course, it's doing that because I'm showing it off right now.
Maybe while it's loading, you should tap an ad.
Oh. Yes, tap an ad so it'll be developed for. Oh, man. I love it when that happens. There we go. This is what I meant to see. All right. So here we have my dinner item up at the very top there, right? $89 total dollars. And I've already kind of filled this out a little bit prior to the show. But basically, we all went to dinner, right? And in this case, what I've done is broken down the different items, right? Steak is $15. It was paid by me because I had extra money. Ron, you showed up to the party and you didn't have... I should tell my wife not to text me during the show.
Good idea, yeah.
Unless she's going into labor. If she's going into labor, then
was
I gotta
that,
go.
Was that it or that's no? Okay.
I don't know. I'm not gonna check
until
after.
Would she text you? Would she actually text you and be like, baby coming now?
She probably would, yes.
BRB, gotta give birth.
Yes. Get home now.
Get
I think it would
now.
Be the other part
I
of that.
I think you need some sort of like, you know, like some sort of code that, you know, like.
Hold on. Anyway. No, it's not that. All right. I just checked it. Everything's cool. Not having a baby today.
H2OBRK.
Okay. Back on track. Back on track.
911.
Okay. So Gina and I were the big spenders at this party. We actually had the money. Ron, you were a freeloader, as usual.
That happens, yeah.
So basically, I've entered in the items that apply to the different people. Who ate what? Like, for instance, I bought a large cake for $20 and everybody ate it. So everybody's paying for it. But I paid for it, right? So basically, it allows you to kind of split down.
You're
kidding me. Stop texting me. Stop it. Sorry, folks. I'm just not winning today.
You cannot buy this entertainment. You can't.
Oh, I'm not winning. Anyways, it's called Going Dutch. There you go. No, that's it. No, I'm just. Okay. All right.
Very safe.
All right, so here we go.
Chad smartly goes to the Google Play
Thank
Store.
Thank you, Chad, for saving me a little bit. All right, so I have all the things. I'm just going to hit calculate costs, and it figures it out, right? Ron, you owe me $17.34. You owe Gina $12.32. I expect that, thank you. See, now what it needs to do is I need to be able to enter in what you gave me.
Right, and they can have a balance with
and
you?
It can have, yes, a balance. Anyways, all right, it probably would have gone a lot better if the app hadn't crashed and my wife hadn't texted me three times. But anyways, you get the point. Going Dutch, it's free. What can you expect? And it's just an easy way to break down who owes how much for when you go out. And I just thought it kind of solved a problem that, yes, in my 20s I had. So
yeah.
PayPal or anything like that where you can like be like send me the money via PayPal?
Oh man, that
Venmo,
would be cool.
If you haven't heard of Venmo, yeah. Venmo is the one to use. Venmo is fantastic because there's no fees or anything like that. All my friends use it when we go out to dinner and be like, oh, I'll cover you and just Venmo me $20 or whatever. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And
the only other thing is if you could take a photo of the receipt that the people give you and then it optical character recognitions it into the app for you.
Again,
that would be awesome.
Giving great
cool.
ideas to developers. Just take them,
just
please.
Just take that idea.
Take our
just
ideas and make money off them. Yeah.
Yes. So.
I would tell the developer to snip this out and attach it to his or her Play Store page.
No.
But, you know, it kind of hit a few snags.
A
little bit. Anyways, it's called Going Dutch. All one word, by the way. There is one that where it's spaced. So Going Dutch, one word. Vote for it if you would, please.
If you have mercy on Jason.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
All right,
Ron.
My turn. I'm up. Phew. So I had a completely different app planned. So I'm kind of winging it because I did a last-minute change this morning. I've been very frustrated because for some reason, whoever opens my gym in the morning has turned it to the dubstep station. And I'm there trying to watch the West Wing, and I just hear... behind it. And I don't know about you guys, but I found that the Nexus 7, at least with Netflix, the volume it could be, I feel like it could be louder. Yes, right.
Yes.
So I have...
Not just the Nexus 7, though, right. I would venture to say. With my Galaxy Tab, same issue.
So I didn't solve that, but this is the app that I found while looking for that.
Oh.
So if anybody knows of an app that can boost the volume on the Nexus 7, let me know, because I've tried like 7 already and it doesn't work at all. Like I question whether it's even possible. But I did stumble upon this app called Smart Volume Control Plus. It's $3.99, so there's no ads. You don't have to worry about blocking any ads. But it's $3.99, and it looks like it's actually pretty worth it. This is a dense app, and considering that I just installed it this morning, I haven't had a chance to totally configure it and play with it, so we're kind of learning together. I'm going to tell you more what it does than show you, because also it has to do with volume. But basically, the concept is that this gives you total control over your volumes on your device. So here on the Volumes tab, you see that I've got... This is a tablet, so it's not a phone, but I've got the ringer, I've got notifications, I've got my media, I've got alarms, I've got the system audio, and I've got in-call audio. So if I had this installed on my phone, as the camera is moving around, I would be able to have a different setting for media going to my ears than I would for phone calls, going for alarms, etc. It's that granular level, but it doesn't just stop there, because I know you can already do that in other apps and in the settings. But in here, then, what you can do is you can set up various profiles, all right? You can – and we've done this a lot before. You know you're going to be at school from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., so turn off your ringer or turn off music or anything like that. We've already seen that. Okay, understood. Now this is where it gets really, really cool. There is a headphones mode that it will detect when you plug in your headphones, and if your headphones get yanked out, it will immediately mute the audio channels of your choice. So if you're like me and you commute via public transportation and your headphones get snagged on somebody's bag when they walk off the Muni train, and then all of a sudden everyone in the car hears your music, that can be kind of embarrassing. Now with this app, the moment your headphones get pulled out, it will mute everything that I've indicated for it to mute. It will also adjust the audio levels based on whether I have headphones in or whether I'm using speakers. So let's say you want the headphones turned, you know, all the way up, but you want the speakers turned down, et cetera. It gives that smart kind of control over it. Now remember, Gina, earlier in the show when I teased – when you were talking about it would be cool if Google Glass could detect whether you're in the car or not, there is actually a speed volume mode on here that will detect your speed and adjust your volume accordingly, which honestly, as a commuter who rides BART, when the BART leaves San Francisco and heads towards Oakland, it speeds up and gets really super loud, and I always turn up the volume on whatever I'm listening to because I can't hear it over the sound noise. So what you can do with this app is you can set a range and say, you know, if I'm going 40 miles or higher, turn the ringer up or turn the media up or turn, you know, turn the system volume up or whatever. And you're able to control it based on speed, which just blows my mind. And kind of it goes right into what we were talking about Glass, where if this app can detect your speed, then why can't Glass? And I'm curious how they're using the speed detection, whether it's via the network and GPS or via the accelerometer or whatnot. But it can do it, and so that's really kind of cool.
Try it on the Nexus 7, right? Which isn't connected to the GPS.
Yes, that's a good point.
We'll see if that's
a good point. So when you go back to the profile screen, when I'm setting up all my various profiles, I can set a speed volume, I can set headphones mode, and you can, much like Tasker, you can granularly control your level of audio coming out of your device. Of course, you can also, based on whether it's Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or mobile data, you can also adjust screen brightness through this, and you can also adjust your various call forwarding. You can indicate it to raise the volume for individual contacts. So, for example, I can have it, when my mother calls, have it turn the volume all the way down. That's a handy device. No, I'm kidding. I'll turn it up. I love my mother. And it's also got an immense variety of widgets here. So here's kind of a 4x1 widget that gives you brightness control, system volume control, media control, alarm control, and you tap on one and it gives you a little easy slider to change it. Down here you can see this gives you a little more control over the buttons as well as over the various profiles. There's a bunch of presets already set for speed, so you can have one for being on the bus or on the highway or running or on the subway or on a tram. So people in Disney can control their volume on the trams. You know, it's just really, really interesting in terms of the power of what it can do in terms of controlling your audio. I was really, really impressed by it. Really good interface. It's one of those unique kind of app, custom app kind of interfaces. It's not using Holo. It's using their own kind of design. But it's only got like 1,000 to 5,000 downloads in the Play Store. And I thought this would be like way super higher. So Smart Volume Control Plus, if you really want really granular control over your audio on your device, this is the way to go. So there you go. $3.99. Worth every penny.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, I showed off one a couple of weeks ago. That looks a lot like it, but it's like a piece of it.
Well, that's why when I saw that, I was like, oh man, and I actually went to the wiki to see if we had covered this app before.
Right. So here, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But so you can see. There you go. See how closely designed those are?
Yeah. Now, when you hit that, does it pop up a.
It gives me a slider.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. So kind of same deal. Yep. Awesome. So. Great. But it gives you a lot more kind of programmable controls.
And just so you know, if you're blinking at the price range, there is a Smart Volume Control Lite that is free that you can check out and play with it. But guaranteed, you'll at $4, it's a no-brainer. So
yeah. Cool.
All right.
Smart Volume Control Plus. All right, Marquez, it is your turn. Let's hope that I don't ruin it for you trying to show off your app. But I have everything I need, I think. So just go ahead and talk about it, and I'll try and keep up.
Okay, so the app is called NFC Task Launcher. And before I show the app, I guess I'll show this is an NFC tag. It's just a simple little tag, thin. It's like this one happens to be a magnet, so you can just put it on your nightstand, in your car, wherever. And so obviously with NFC tags, you can read them and write to them. And this is an app that'll allow you to set a lot of profiles for exactly that. So when you first open the app, it gives you a bunch of presets, and you can have one for a specific Foursquare check-in point. So you can put one on your car handle, and when you walk out your car, tap it to your car handle, and you just checked into a certain place.
That's cool.
So we just saw like the profiles with audio. This is kind of like profiles via NFC, if you will. So you can have it perform a bunch of actions based on when you have an NFC tag. So I have a tag that's like right on the nightstand, pointing in all kinds of directions over there, right over there. And when I go and tap my phone against the nightstand, it silences it, sets the alarm, and lowers the volume all the way down, and I can go to sleep without having to do all those things manually. So that's just one of the profiles I have set. So once you set a profile, it's not on this phone, but right next to that, you have all your tasks. So you're going to have a whole ton of tasks that it does based on all the different tags that you have. So again, you can have a whole bunch of different NFC tags and put one, like I said, in your car, maybe in your car dock. Maybe you want to have one on your nightstand, maybe have one on your refrigerator or on your door as you leave. There's some examples there. And they'll do a whole bunch of tasks, some system tasks, whatever you want it to do, and take care of that for you. Now, it also has this neat tab all the way to the right that shows how many actions I've performed. I've only been using it for a couple of weeks, but apparently I've saved 55 seconds by their estimate of how much time I would have spent. So there you go. There's a minute I've saved in the past week using NFC actions. And yeah, it's just kind of like an automated way to set settings on your phone based on where you are or what you're doing or what you're about to do. I think it's pretty convenient, and it's free.
And
can't beat that.
The app actually writes, or well, it reprograms the tag itself. So it's actually very, very easy. You just kind of
Get a brand new NFC tag, which it also gives you the ability to buy, it gives you a whole bunch of options like, hey, you can buy these NFC tags on Google Wallet and just ship them right to you. And basically, if I were to, I guess, scan, if I tap this new blue NFC tag that I haven't ever tapped yet, it'll ask me immediately, hey, look, a new tag. Would you like to set an action for that tag? And then you can write to that tag. So whenever this device with this app reads that tag again, it knows exactly what to do.
Awesome.
Like NFC really is, cool. I feel like NFC is so there's so much potential there. Like
underutilized.
Underutilized. Yeah. Like I've been using, we talked about it before, but in San Francisco, they've got NFC tags on the parking meters now. Mm-hmm. So when I park, I just tap my phone to the parking meter and it launches the Pay by Phone app and I say how long I'm going to be there and I pay for it and it's all taken care of. It remembers my info and like little things like that. And like that's the future. Like, and now imagine if that's in your watch. You just tap your watch to the parking meter, you'll be all set. So.
There we go.
No reaching into the pocket.
Or someone else taps their watch to yours and steals your
Oh, wait a minute.
No, I'm sure you have to authorize it.
Yeah. Very cool.
The app doesn't have to be running in order to read the tag, right? That your phone can be asleep. You can just pick it up and tap it, and it unlocks and launches and does whatever it has to do.
Exactly. My phone could be off and the screen could be off and everything. And even if brightness would have been on max and I tap it, brightness will be set to minimum next time it wakes. So everything does happen without the app being on.
That's great. And Money 2004 in the chat room points out, I think this is valuable information. That's 10 hours a decade that you just saved if you keep up. 10 hours a decade versus your...
That's significant time.
Yeah.
10 hours.
Full work day. I'm such a sucker for the apps that tell you how much time
you save.
Totally. I know. Yeah,
productivity thing for me.
A full work day every decade using this app. That's fantastic.
Just a vacation every 30 years.
Yeah, I know. Think about it.
Just use that app every day for 10 years and you'll be okay. All right. Piece of cake. Awesome. Love it. That's great stuff. Gina, what do you have?
Oh, man, these three apps are a really tough act to follow. I've got
two.
Pretty simple. No.
It's okay. Yeah, it's okay. It's all right.
Tough acts to follow. I've got a pretty simple one, which is for the, I thought for a second, maybe it's just an unusual intersection of people who use an Android phone and have a Mac. I don't think it's that unusual. I use a Mac, and I've got an Android phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know at least Ron does, right?
Yep.
So,
I do too.
Here's the thing, like I watch video on my Mac all the time. I don't have a big fancy media center set up, but I often will take my MacBook Pro and just connect it to the TV and watch, watch some video or listen to music or whatever. And I have an Apple remote, but I lose it. It's not in the room. So my pick this week is called Mac Remote. And that's exactly what it does. It's a remote control for your Mac. It's not a full screen kind of remote. You don't see your Mac's desktop or anything like that. It's a remote that lets you control certain apps. So iTunes, VLC, a lot of sort of media apps, Keynote. Basically, in order to set it up, and this is kind of a nice thing about the app, is that you don't have to install any special software on your Mac. What you do is you just enable remote login on your Mac in order to get this running. So you download Mac Remote. It's free. It's got ads. You can get rid of ads and pay for a version. But on your Mac, you in System Preferences, you can turn on Remote Login. And basically, this app, you tap Connect in this app, and you connect to your Mac through that Remote Login. So you have to be on the same Wi-Fi network as your Mac. Once you connect, you can go through this whole list of apps: iPhoto, iTunes. There you go. You got it going. Yeah, playing.
Please.
Yeah, nice.
No.
That's the music they play at my gym. Stop.
So you get volume control.
And the chat was just...
Call. Oh, that's fantastic. Yes.
Pop-up phone call. Oh, man.
So you basically just get to control your Mac. You can do brightness control. You can do volume control. You can control iPhoto, iTunes, Keynote. So if you forget your Mac or if you get your remote and you're doing a presentation, you can use your phone to play slides in Keynote, PowerPoint, Preview, QuickTime, Spotify, VLC. I use VLC a lot for that stuff that doesn't play in iTunes. Mm-hmm. And you can do system controls. You can put your Mac to sleep. You can shut it down. For me, though, I'm definitely going to use this. Sometimes I just like to watch stuff in VLC, and I'll get it all set up on the, sort of on the entertainment center. I'll go sit down on the couch and be like, oh, I just want to pause it for just 1 second to talk about this thing. And this app lets you do that. So really simple remote control for the Mac, Mac Remote. And like I said, it's ad supported, but you can click on remove ad, and there's a remove ad version. And I'm actually checking what the price on that is. The Google Play Store is giving me the little spinny.
Oh, the price?
The price on the non-ad
paid one.
Yeah, for the paid.
Because it's an in-app purchase.
It's $1.32.
Yeah.
Not bad.
So not so bad.
The remotes on the phone are great. I have the Google TV remote on my phone, and I use that more than the TV remote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because your phone's with you, right?
Yep,
it's on
exactly.
You.
Exactly.
Right.
So yeah, good for Mac users.
Cool. Awesome.
Great arena.
Starting with it packed a punch, going Dutch, followed closely by Smart Volume Control Plus, then by NFC Task Launcher, and finally Mac Remote. You're going to have a hard time with this arena, folks. I know it.
I'm picking Marquez.
early reports are in. If you go to, aaapoll.com/102, that's aaapoll.com/102, and place your vote for your favorite app in the arena this week. We'll check in on it next week. Beth Whitmire already put a comment in the side and says, tough choice this week.
See, it is tough, not... Beth. Yeah, I agree. Apparently, yeah. Apparently, it's not tough as NFC Task Launcher is now running away with it.
No kidding. Yeah, now Marquez sold those NFC tags. I just want them now. I want the tags.
I've got to stop bringing my A-game apps when we have guests. That's what I found. This is the guests normally.
Yeah, Jason, you and me are in big trouble. This is a Ron Marquez fight. Let's just be honest.
That's okay. I will enjoy watching it all play out. Awesome. This is great. This has been a fantastic episode. I think we've talked about everything from the last week of Android. There is nothing that we didn't talk about.
We've covered everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then that is it. Next week, actually, we have another special guest, John Fingus, associate editor at Engadget. He's just written some really cool pieces over there, and he's also actually frequently in the chat room. So we invited him on the show, and he's going to join us next week. So looking forward to that. But Marquez, we've had a great time having you on the show, man. It's awesome to get you on, and I hope that we can invite you back again sometime. I hope you come
definitely.
Back.
Yeah.
We haven't scared.
Thanks for having me.
We haven't scared you to the hills at this point.
Not yet.
Because this was quite an episode. Marquez Brownlee, most people probably know you more by MKBHD. Where can people find your stuff? This is kind of your opportunity to promote whatever you want to promote. Go for it.
Yeah, I make YouTube videos first and foremost, I guess, primarily. So that would be at youtube.com/MKBHD. And then everything else is /MKBHD as well. So twitter.com/MKBHD, facebook.com/MKBHD. And actually on Google Plus now is google.com/+MarquezBrownlee. But that's hard to spell. So you can use gplus.to/MKBHD.
Excellent.
Nice. Yeah.
Right cool. on. Cool.
The man knows branding. I can respect that.
The man's easy to find. I like that.
Good job, Marquez.
That's right. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Marquez. And we'll definitely invite you back and bring you back on again. It was great.
Yeah,
cool.
Ron, the horn.
What you got?
Yeah, so if you like my insanity, you can go to about.me/RonXO and you find links to my Google Plus and my Facebook and Twitter and all that fun stuff. And if you like to get entertained, check out imagecomics.com, my day job, where we're making some of the best comics in the business. Read Saga. It's the best comic book out there. So, check it all out.
All right. Awesome. And how about you, Gina?
I co-host This Week in Google, which airs on Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific here on the Twit Network. And when I'm not podcasting, I work on an app called ThinkUp, and we just launched a redesign of the homepage, thinkup.com, where we're getting ready to launch our kind of software as a service product. You can sign up for the waiting list there at thinkup.com. And I also make an Android app called To-Do Text. It's todotxt.com. I hope you check that out. And that's it.
Excellent. And you can find me at about.me/Jason Howell or at my site, jasonhowell.net, or on Twitter at Jason Howell.
Sure. What about your project, your music project?
Yeah, that's still going. Yellowgoldmusic.com.
Yellowgoldmusic.
Sometimes I feel like maybe I promote that a little too much.
No, no. It is my favorite music site done by one of my friends.
Aw, thanks.
So there you go.
Shucks. Thanks
None
for that,
None of your
Ron.
Other musician friends watch the show, I guess.
Well, there you have it. Straight from Ron's mouth. Yeah. Listen to him then. That's it for this week. Thank you once again for spending an hour and a half with us talking Android. You can leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email or a video mail. Just attach a link to an email and send that to aaa@twit.tv. Show can be found at we are at Android Show. There we go. Show notes are on the web at twit.tv/AAA. You can find just the entire show notes that we use for the show, as well as past episodes on our site there, iTunes, YouTube, all over the place. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.